First of all, today, let's begin properly. It's the last shiur of the year, a formal shiur. I'm actually speaking in this building on Friday, but that's in a different context there. We're honoring Marvin Hershkowitz, who's inducted into the YU Sport Hall of Fame. Today is May 29th, Monday, and I have to say, Baruch Hashem, I called off classes last week. Were you here, Charlie? You don't know what we went through in Yerushalayim. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, where the police are responsible. They had thousands of policemen to put out to save Trump's life. Couldn't put out 30 policemen at corners. There was the highway was, don't ask, there were traffic accidents, the highway closed. It's a nightmare. But Baruch Hashem, today we're here.
Now, problem with my bike.
Well, with your bike, still it was not easy.
No, it still
was not easy. I just want to comment on correspondence from all over the world. So if you'll hear yesterday's shiur, you'll understand how I defended myself against the critique that I made Danny Greer famous and all that's happened with Danny Greer. I don't want to repeat myself, but my defense was pretty good. Okay. That's number one. Number two, with Harry Scherer, I have to say, and everyone is commenting on this, here's a man who became a total shagetz, a neusvaf, went so far away from Torah v'das and Yiddishkeit, the Sadek Kedushin for a goy and a Jew, and in his will, he died there a few months ago. In lieu of flowers, the family is asking you to donate to the circle at the Chabad Jewish Center of Mission Viejo, if I'm pronouncing it right.
And there's a
Viego, whatever, what's that, a place in
California.
Orange County, California, and there is the phone number. So it shows you that evidently something resuscitated at the end of his life, or to put it a little differently, what Chabad can achieve, no one else can achieve, and I'll let it stand at that. As far as my share of 2 weeks ago, whenever we met last, so I got a lot of compliments. People called me all types of nice names for the with Bruria Huttner. So I told everyone I don't accept any compliment until I hear something from a Chaim Berlin insider. Do I make sense? I have not heard, but Alex, I'm encouraging again, get in touch with Rabbi Mendy Farber. I knew him from Bnei Akiva. He was the Talmud Mupak of Rav Huttner. And see what he has to say. He's no youngster today, so in his 80s, he has to be honest, okay? See what he has to say and let me know. And if he says I make sense, then I'll accept the compliments. Until then, let it hang fire. Also, a Chabadnik wrote to me that I mentioned Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld, that he followed the first Baal Tshuva yeshiva, and he said in checking the yeshiva was established in 67. However, in 62, Chabad established Yeshivat Hadach HaTorah, headed by Rabbi Yisrael Jacobson, and that was the first Baal Tshuva yeshiva in America. I stand corrected and not corrected, because Chabad, we take for granted they're dealing with Baalei Tshuva. They were the first. I meant the first mainstream non-Chabad Baalei Tshuva yeshiva. Rav Shlomo Freifeld gets all the credit. And when I go home, I have to bow before my wife, because her mother taught Shlomo Freifeld third grade yeshiva, Torat Chaim, it was called, right? That's the one my mother-in-law taught, East New York, the one that was in East New York. Torat Chaim was in, now I'm confused already, was it Torat? It may have been Yeshiva Torat Chaim, was the name of Rabbi Shmidman's yeshiva in East New York. My mother taught there, and I told you, when Rabbi Shmidman met me, he said, he's sorry that I'm around. I looked at him. He said, if your mother-in-law had not married, you wouldn't be here, but I would have had the greatest teacher that taught for me. When she got married, in those days when you married, women stopped working. It was a different world. All right, now, one thing we noticed that Yeshiva, Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin, and I even quoted Rabbi Lichtenstein last week, it really moved into a different format in America. Rabban Lichtenstein gives his Rebbe, Rabbi Yitzchak, the credit that even the Musa movement he recreated in an American context, and with the Maral, with the Pachat Yitzchak, and all that went with it. Torah Vadas is another example. Here's the yeshiva, and both Chaim Berlin and Torah Vadas were established by Mizrahi people. And as the years were on, Torah Vadas, Mr. Mendelovich, they always said, we need here a little bit of Hasidus. Well, as time moved on, the 60s, in the 50s, 60s, into the 70s, I would say that Torah Vadas became a lot more than a pintle of Hasidus, we'll put it that way. And they underwent change. What's amazing about the Yeshiva University, and I should really say Yeshiva Shulchan and Ritz, is that it retained the same status, the same hue, the same configuration, the same gestalt, 40s, 50s, 60s, only in the 70s, did it start to change? And here, very interesting question. Why? Why was Ritz different? We have to go into the personalities of the Rav and Rav Shmuel Belkin. And at the end of today's lecture, I think you'll understand exactly why Ritz remained constant. Now, a word about Rav Shmuel Belkin, who becomes a very dominant figure, elected president in Rosh Yeshiva, a position he basically holds until shortly before his death. He was a young man when he became president. Rabbi Revel was a young man. Rabbi Revel died in his 50s. Rabbi Belkin died in his 60s. Both of them carried a tremendous burden in running the yeshiva. Rabbi Lam, and this is Rakefet's part, where you can agree or disagree, Rabbi Lam had the advantage of being older when he became president than Rosh Yeshiva. And that worked to his advantage, because being older and having a rich experience in the rabbinate, seeing victory and seeing defeat, seeing success and seeing the tribulations of life, he was more able to handle all the heartache that went through running the yeshiva. Now, Rabbi Belkin, and here I want to mention a book to you, which I have xeroxed the entire chapter in front of me, although I'm going to give you my commentary. Author, a book I highly recommend, Orthodoxy Awakens, The Belkin Era and Yeshiva University. The author just died a few months ago, Victor B. Geller. Rabbi Reuben knew Vic Geller. I certainly knew him very well. I'm the one that worked very hard to get this book published. It's not a scholarly volume. It's not a PhD. It's a memoir, and it gives you Vic's take on what he saw and what went on. And Victor Geller, very astute individual, yeshiva boy, living in the Bronx, came into MTA before World War II, served in the army, came back to work for the yeshiva, worked for the yeshiva once, twice, I think there might have been three different periods where he left. He worked for the OU a while, went into a private business, he was a travel agent, and nevertheless, yeshiva was the fountain of his youth and basically the fountain of his life. And he was very insightful. When you dealt with Vic Geller, you were dealing with an individual of a very high IQ and very insightful. And there's a very important point. You see, and we'll come back to this later, but in understanding Rabbi Belkin, he was very different than the other Torah individuals on the American scene. The other Torah individuals on the American scene all got involved in Torah politics beyond their own individual yeshiva. You talk about Torah Vadas, you talk about Chaim Berlin, you talk about MTJ, even RJJ, although to a smaller extent. Right away you have to talk about Agudas HaRabbanim, you have to talk about Torah Mesorah. There were other organizations too. Later, Agudat Yisrael, Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, Today, I don't have to tell you, the greatest akalad that can come your way in America is to be appointed a member of the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. And you have to be involved. Reb Aaron Cutler basically spent most of his time outside of Lakewood, then in Lakewood. Vic, you're reading me? He was in Brooklyn for Shabbos, Brooklyn during the week, Agudas Yisrael, Agudat HaRabbanim. Lakewood was part of his show, but at times it was a sideshow. And you can take Reb Moshe, who was less involved beyond, but even Reb Moshe, who didn't speak at the Agudat HaRabbanim convention, who didn't speak at the Agudat Yisrael convention. Reb Moshe was Reb Moshe, the Torah of Adas, Reb Gedalia Shor, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, Reb Yitzchak Kutner. Dr. Belkin was a total invisible individual. It was like he and his life meshed with Yeshiva University into one. I never, ever remember seeing him involved outside the yeshiva. When he used the word we, he meant himself and Reitz Yeshiva University versus they. The outside world, Vic has a beautiful line here. He resisted the pressures to become a public joiner. He remained, I would call him a public loner. You can't say he was not in the public sphere. He had to raise money, he had to keep Reitz afloat, but he never was involved in anything beyond the yeshiva. And this, of course, means that there was no outside pressure. It's not like Rabbi Revel had to put up with the Agudas HaRabbanim. It's not like Rabbi Revel had to find favor with Rabbi Leventhal, with Rabbi Margolis. These were the big names. These were the Rabbanim. Rabbi Belkin remained an individual, a lamp and a light unto himself. He has a nice description here. Belkin was not a hands-on administrator. Details on papers, work did not interest him. Never did I see any documents on his desk. The only two items on his desk were his ever-present cup of coffee and his ashtray. Conversations in his spare, impersonal office were polite, low-key, and brief. Small talk was out of place. After a courteous hearing, a staff member was given a decision and instructions and little elaboration. The people who worked with him, he had confidence in them. Go and do it yourself. Now, this is one important point, but there's much more. And here's what's amazing. Reb Shmuel Belkin, and you notice I referred to him with different titles, because he was at times Dr. Samuel Belkin, president of Yeshiva University, a man who could sit with Einstein and joke around with him, the famous picture where the two of them are laughing. And concomitantly, he was still that rotten yeshiva boy. His concept of what America needed was exactly the same understanding of the Rav. And here I want you to hear me thoroughly, and in your spare time, open up my second volume on the Rav and read the Rav word by word. All I did was translate from the Yiddish into English, word by word. This is the Rav, and I got to know the Rav inside out. The Rav was not a Hirshian. It's not a Hirshian. It's a big difference between who Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch was. Not the Rav Hirsch that they tried to recreate today, but Rav Hirsch really believed with all his heart and soul in Torah and Derech Eretz, popularly called Neo-Orthodoxy. You read the 19 letters, Rav Hirsch says, who forced us into a ghetto? The Jew should not live in a ghetto. We were coerced. And this broad vision, and you all know, if you look at the syllabus of the way they studied in the Reali High School in Frankfurt, It resembles Ramaz, you follow? It doesn't even resemble TA of our time. It resembles Ramaz. Rav Hirsch had this very broad vision, Torum Derech Eretz, and he believed in it, B'lev V'Nefesh. The Rav and Rav Shmuel Belkin, both of them, they believed a yeshiva has to be a yeshiva. The only yeshiva they knew were the Eastern European yeshiva, the Litvishe yeshiva. But America's America? We have to have a college. They never sought integration. They never sought synthesis. I'll use a word that I coined. It was harmonious coexistence. You had a yeshiva, and they wanted that yeshiva to be just like the yeshiva of Europe. And at a Peyish yeshiva, the same atmosphere, the same learning, the same approach. No compromise whatsoever, not Chassidus, not America, not synthesis. And then in America, as the Rev says, I quote Rebbe, we don't have a choice. We can't help it. We have to have a real college. And they wanted a real college. I told you this more than once. The Rav, and it's very amazing, Rav Shmuel Belkin, Rabbi Revel, you may say was forced into it because he had to get proper professors that were world recognized in order to get proper accreditation. So, of course, you couldn't run a Catholic college in 1928. But Rabbi Belkin, the Rav, could have run a Catholic college. And they were totally opposed. The college has to be the college. It has to be a real university experience. We have to prepare the youngsters to live in the greater American culture. And this reflects, I don't have to tell you, we had in Yeshiva College, we had classes in English literature. You used to walk into class, there was one professor, every second sentence had a curse word. There was one professor, every class he began by maledicting Dr. Belkin. Academic freedom. And you could ask, there were classes, and there was never a Haviamina not to teach Darwin's biology, or not to teach Greek mythology. Remember I told you more than once, the kids would go crying to the Rav. It happened in my time too, my own students. Rabbi Soloveitchik, how can we study Greek mythology about the God? The Rav used to say, you don't want to understand the foundations of Western civilization? Absolutely, you have to know Greek mythology.
What about biblical criticism?
Biblical criticism didn't enter into the YU curriculum, which, by the way, remained very critical because the classes given in Tanakh were very elementary. You understand that someone like myself grew up in Akiva. I didn't need anyone to teach me Rashi and Rabak. I could do it on my own, but Sudak. You understand? I knew Hebrew. But it never ended biblical criticism. But that's not part of Western culture. There you're dealing with simple apicursus.
That does establish a certain red line.
I don't know. Fine. It shows at least that much. Even Bernard Rebel Graduate School is very limited. Not biblical criticism. They can teach.
They never taught that.
They can teach Talmudic criticism. That they were able to teach in our time, because that was within. You always found like Professor Teddy, Rabbi Parnas once had a big argument with Rabbi Feldblum. Rabbi Feldblum, who was now getting his doctorate, and he published an article, Eidi Mesiri Karte, Eidi Chatima Karte, and Rav Rishonim Paskin one way, and he went a different way, and Rabbi Parnas was telling Rabbi Feldblum off, and Rabbi Feldblum said, I quote him word by word, when it comes to halacha, we follow the halacha. But from research, I have a right to take this point of view. There are Rishonim who agree with me, even if they're a miyut. We wouldn't paskin like them, but this is the way I understand what happened at that time.
For the JEPD.
What's the JEPD?
That's the biblical criticism.
What is JEPD?
I don't
want
to get into that. Jehovah.
Okay, got it. Okay, okay. Say, I want to. Okay, but the basic. So when they went to the Rav and they criticized Greek mythology, in retrospect, you've heard me say this 100 times over the past 58 years, the greatest gift I got was learning Greek mythology. Why? Because what's Greek mythology about? The gods do every sin under the sun. They rob, they steal, they kill, they plunder, they rape, they seduce. And they're the gods. If the gods can do it, the people can do it. The masses. Take a look where we're at today. President of the United States. Locker talk. Do I have to explain that? Netanyahu's wife, who did a beautiful job when Trump was saying, I don't want to criticize her, she was fabulous. It's his third marriage. Trump, Melena, if I'm pronouncing it right, it's his third marriage. Where are we at? Right now, yesterday, a frum Jew who I had the greatest respect for represented me. My vote put him into the Knesset. No, yes, where was he questioned yesterday? 443 on women. God have mercy. As we speak, as we are here, as we are rejoicing in learning and gaining knowledge, a Jew with a beard, his wife with a tichel, are being questioned in two separate rooms so they don't coordinate their stories in 443. You understand? Well, Derry has to say, Greek mythology, the god sin, I'm not a god, I'm just Ari Derry. What's wrong if I robbed a few $1 million? You follow me, Mark? The greatest gift I got was Greek mythology. Take my word for it, Charlie. The Rav was right. But what's amazing here is Reb Shmuel Belkin and the Rav had the same approach. The yeshiva doesn't budge. I remember we once, Dr. Belkin appeared in public, which is very rare, and I'll get to it. And he gave a talk. The talk is published. Brilliant. I mean, he was a brilliant individual. And the students asked him afterwards about synthesis. Why don't we have courses in Jewish biology and Jewish chemistry and Jewish mathematics and all that that implies? You have it here in Israel. And oh no, synthesis, the Rav used to say, synthesis is cheap, a cheap solution. It's never pure, it's never total. And they both had the same approach. The yeshiva didn't budge. Yeah, but now, I'm going to show you something very interesting. Wow. Not only that, Dr. Belkin, you see, Rabbi, let's go back to Rabbi Revel. Rabbi Revel, my cousin organizes the yeshiva, the high school, the college, the graduate school. But everyone laughed at the yeshiva. The Rupayish Rabbanim visited America. I have some of this material, by the way, in Revel. You can read it. The editorials. Does haste by yeshiva? This is a yeshiva. How much do the guys know? Particularly as more and more American kids. Remember, I spoke yesterday about Rabbi Salbi Friedman. But within 5, 10, 15 years, the majority of the kids in REITs were either born in America or grew up in America. No, a Europeisha kid started cheder at 3, at 4. What that kid is already learning and knows at the age of 10, 12, an American kid is first graduating MTA. Maybe he made a siyum on Masechet Megillah and Masechet Tanit. You follow? No, what's with Baba Batra? Who learned all of Baba Batra by the time he was 15, 16? So there was this attitude towards REITs. It's second rate. And Rabbi Revel, of course, took the first step to ameliorate it. He brought in 1922 Reb Shlomo Palachek, the Meitzer Te'ili, to America. You know Shlomo Palachek from Rehovot, you right or wrong. But you got an unbelievable individual. Imagine who his grandfather was. You understand? Kol HaTorah Kula, and he knew science and mathematics. And I heard the story from the kids who did it. I yet knew his Talmidim. That one time he came to the yeshiva and the kids were playing stickball outside. It was an April day, a nice spring day. And he loved the way, and that's the famous statement he made, Favasa Minish Kishpilt in our youth. Why didn't we play in our youth? We would have been the same Talmidei Chachamim, and we would have had a youth. I've quoted that many times. It's quoted by his son-in-law in his book on his father-in-law. What an individual. So one time the boys showed him the box score, I don't know, the Yankees versus Boston, the old rivalry, and within 2 minutes, he looks at it, and then he repeats it totally by heart, not even knowing what he's talking about. Garrick, Ruth, each one, 0-for-4, 2-for-4, 1-for-4, runs, RBI, the box score. It's a Gainesha Cup. So when he came to the yeshiva, it elevated the yeshiva. Of course, as a result of his coming, then when he died so young, Rav Shimon Shkop was there for a year, and then, of course, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik came, and this brings Mori Rebbe to America, and as they say, the rest is history. Now, Dr. Belkin, according to Vic Geller, I mean, I can't say that I saw this or knew this. I was a kid at the time, although I was particularly close to Rabbi Belkin at a time when most students didn't even know what he looked like. Charlie, did you know Dr. Belkin when you were in the yeshiva?
It was there
from the Vikings. But there are reasons why. Read Washington. You'll see how our paths cross. And let me read Vic, and then I'll tell you a good story. Belkin had little regard for Reitz as an institution of higher Jewish learning. With the exception of Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Moshe Shatzkitz, and Rav Moshe Pelaev, he was dismissive of the Reitz faculty. Who were they? What did they know? What Gottlet and Torah did they have? You understand, he was thinking of Radin. I'll tell you what Radin was. He was thinking of Grodno. He was thinking of what he saw in his youth. His special affection for Rav Pelaev, a gentle man who rarely spoke above a whisper, was demonstrated when Rav Pelaev came to invite Belkin to his son's forthcoming marriage. In addition to attending, Belkin gave Pelaev a check to help pay for the wedding. And you see, Rav Pelaev is an interesting story unto himself. His grandson, I understand he has a grandson learning. I wish I got to meet these people.
Who was he?
Rav Pelaev, a biography should be done of him. There is something that his son did, Zichrono Levracha, I knew, Izzy Pelaev, but something should be done. Rav Pelaev was a Kletzka, a Slutska. He studied it with the Ritbaz, with Rabaron. He was a contemporary of Rabaron Kutla. He was older than Rabaron, if I'm not mistaken. And when Rabaron came to America in the 1930s, should he give a shir in the yeshiva? You know, he already was, there was kanot against the yeshiva, it was 37, I believe, to raise funds for Kletzk. And Rav Pelaev was one who encouraged him, and he knew him yet from Slutsk, which was before Kletzk. Come, give a shir. Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin was part of this chabura. He told Rav Aaron, the yeshiva is nicht anders, yeda andere yeshiva. The yeshiva is not different than any other yeshiva. And everyone loved Rav Pelaev. When he came to America, he went into business. He tried to make a living. And of course, he wasn't a businessman. And then Rabbi Revel appointed him to the faculty. He taught for 46 years in Reitz. And he was beloved. And he, when you spoke to him, it was barely above a whisper that you heard him. Sunday through Wednesday, he gave a shir on the daf. Rashi, Tosfot, Fashteina, Sugya. Thursday, he gave a pilpul. And his svarim are all from the Thursday shigurim. He published many svarim, and they are all from the Thursday shigurim.
He's one of the Rashi
Yeshivas. Yeah, of course. So Rabbi Bell, he taught in the end room, Rabbi Moshe Aaron Pelaev, the Rav, and then in the, and in the, was, I don't know if there was another room there. I think those were,
David Lifshitz,
where did he teach? In the room next to the Rav, on the other side. On the other side, yeah, I don't remember, because that room of Rav Pelaev, originally Rav Moshe Shatzkis taught there. And when Rav Moshe passed on, Rav Pelaev took over that room, 101. I don't recall where Reb David taught. Interesting. It could be he taught in the third room if there was. If not, he might have taught where the Rav taught, because the Rav is only there twice a week, on Tuesday afternoon and Wednesday morning. But Rabbi Belkin, this was not what he was dreaming about. He wanted a yeshiva to be like a Litvishi yeshiva. He was always trying to recapture the past, his youth. And here you have one of the most fantastic stories. It begins on page 161. But I knew the story long before Vic Geller published it. But I told Vic, you must publish this for future generations. If you want a proof how Rabbi Belkin was always looking to enhance the yeshiva, Bernard Rebbe Graduate School. I had a chaver, a classmate, studying many of the same courses we studied together. At the time, a fairly young man named Ephraim Shach. And we knew his father was a Rosh Yeshiva in Israel. His father began in Hadarom, in Rehovot, first has the yeshiva, basically. And then his father goes on to Panovich. In the 1960s, early 60s, no one dreamt who a Rav Shach would become. But everyone knew his given a Litvish Talmud Chacham, on the level of Rav Aaron Kotler. Rav Shach was a Litvish, was a Kletzko, he was also part of this Chabura, and his Hatmada was legendary, his Mesirat Nefesh. Do you know that Rabbi Belkin wanted to bring him to New York, to the yeshiva? And what happened, very interesting, he writes that Rabbi Belkin wanted Weiss. Yeah, all right, I guess it's what I know. It's not that Rabbi Belkin's, but I got to tell you who Professor Avram Weiss was. Anyone recognize the name? Professor Avram Weiss was, he and his brother-in-law, Professor Hanuch Albeck, they were the leading two Gedolei Yisrael in Chochmat Yisrael. They were the two most famous names. What Rav Shaul Lieberman later becomes, they were world famous. Now, I knew Professor Weiss. What can I tell you? His children were my buddies. He was in the Bronx. He got out. They got to read. There is a biography, but it's never been published for the public. It's only for family. They get out with miracles. He was in the Warsaw ghetto. He was on the Judenrat. You understand what I'm saying? And he was smuggled out. They finally got to Portugal, finally got to the United States. No, he needs Parnassa. Bernard Revel Graduate School swallowed him up. Professor Albeck became the head of the whole Talmud department in Bar-Ilan University. Now, these were brothers-in-laws who knew Shas on the back of their hand, backwards and forwards. They were both totally frum. They were respected in the yeshiva world. But their approach was different. They were in Chochmat Yisrael. Professor Weiss reorganized the Talmud, the Seder, chronologically, what the order should be. And he published endless volumes. He always used to say, I don't know if there are three people alive who can understand what I'm writing. But he was a world Talmud Chacham. So he was going to Israel. It has to be the early 60s. Dr. Belkin calls him in. It was very rare then. You went to Israel. It wasn't like today. We go back and forth at a moment's notice. Dr. Belkin called him in and said, Dr. Weiss, they spoke Yiddish, obviously, their native language. I understand you're going to visit Eretz Yisrael. I want to give you a very special assignment. I'd like you to go to visit Rav Shach and invite him to join the faculty of Reitz. And I want you to tell him that this invitation is not only from me, but I spoke with Rav Soloveitchik. It's from both of us.
What year is
it? It has to be approximately 62, I would say. 63. There's not an exact...
Did you already put the Rav in Kerem by that?
No, not yet. The Rav hasn't published yet. The Rav is still a Briska who has a PhD from the U of Berlin.
But no, don't use that word yet. That happens later. Look at his collected writings, volume 4. You'll see I quoted in my work on the Rough. So
it's in the world of you talk about.
I quoted. Yeah. Maybe in a footnote, whatever. Professor Weiss is a little bit upset. How's he going to get to Rav Shach? Then it dawns upon him. Effie Shach was his Talmud. So he calls in his Talmud, and Effie Shach contacts his father, and Rav Weiss has received a kavod gadol, but he doesn't want to leave Israel. And he never did come to YU. So you see, that little story, which is absolutely true, Ephraim Shach told it to me 99 times over. Vigela knew the story from within. Yitzchak, did he ever talk with you about it? You worked with Effie Shach. And Vigela knew the story from within. He was working for Yeshiva then. But it reveals Rabbi Belkin's mindset. It also reveals the Rav's mindset. The yeshiva has to be a Litvish yeshiva. The yeshiva needs Gedolei Yisrael. As the Rav used to boast, and I don't agree with my Rebbe, and I have a right to disagree, it's finished a chassid, I'm a Litvak. He used to boast, some of my Talmidim would have been outstanding even in Volozhin. All right, I don't know, I haven't yet seen a YU Musmach who's on the level of Rav Kook, the level of Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein. Maybe I'm wrong, you can correct me. Well, if the Rav is boasting, some of my Talmidim would be among the best in Volozhin. But you see, Rabbi Belkin, as much as he Americanized, as much as he became part of Western culture, after all, the man comes to America, could barely speak English. Could I have letters of Dr. Belkin from 28, 29, didn't know how to write English. Within a few years, he has a PhD from Brown University. He's taking courses at Harvard. Wow, what an individual, Dr. Belkin. But as much as he Americanized, he never forgot his roots. And I used to see him. I can never forget it. Here, he's dealing with wealthy people and Max Etra, the chairman of the board, and Einstein, and building the medical school. And I told you the whole story of 68, 69, when Rogozin was on top of the world and he had made so much money and he gave Yeshiva heavy money. And then he came up with an idea, rabbis have to be more ethical. And they established the institute. There would be 10 scholars who would work on papers in different areas for enhancing ethical and moral thinking among the rabbis. And I was invited to be one of the scholars, and I was assigned the topic, Dina de Malchuta Dina. I hope you've all seen, that was one of my very first articles. It's been, you should know, it's been reprinted many places, many different areas in South Africa. In Morasha, it was used as a text that appeared originally in tradition. It appears today in Rekhafet Aron, I don't know, Chedek Aleph, Chedek Bet. All right, Dina de Malchuta Dina. I showed it to the professor at Hebrew U who wrote on it, and he gave me credit. He says, you understand the topic? Okay, Baruch Hashem, fine. Now, I was working very hard and very fast because I was deciding that, you know, my wife decided either I follow her to Israel or finished. So I had to get it done. We're going in Aliyah. So I was the first one to hand in a finished paper. Now I have to sit. Rogozin is paying. I have to sit with Gedolei Yisrael. I'm shivering. The Rav, Rabbi Belkin, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, the head of the institute, Professor Isidore Twesky / Tolna Rav, Tolna Rebbe, the Rav's son-in-law, or other son-in-law, and I have to defend my paper, and I couldn't believe it. There is Dr. Belkin, and suddenly he said, oh, yeah, this topic, and he starts shooting information on Dina de Malchuta Dina. I have to say, not the Rav, and not Rabbi Lichtenstein, and not Professor Twesky, no one shot the knowledge at me.
that Rabbi Belkin. And this was Rabbi Belkin. Harmonious coexistence. Never forgot his roots. Remember what I told you? The Shanghai crowd, he was filled with gemilut chesed. Some of them he employed. MTA, BTA. BTA was shaped by the Shanghai crowd. Rabbi Epstein, Rabbi Yosef David Epstein, the leading figure, those of you who know the history of BTA. There were others. MTA, Rabbi Hanich Fishman, Rabbi Gershon Yankelevich, Rabbi Avram Berkowitz, Zichat Tzadik Levracha, died so young. One after another, Rabbi Shmuel Feibrashevitz, BTA, one after another, he found jobs, created jobs. Those that he couldn't help with a job, he created a kollel. Remember I told you the first kollel in yeshiva's history was a kollel for survivors who had not yet found their place on the American scene. So you see, this was Rabbi Belkin, this was Rabbi Soloveitchik. Very different than Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner's thinking, very different than Mr. Shraga Feivel Mendelovich's thinking. They thought in terms of America, a yeshiva without compromise, but we need a university without compromise. And I want you to know, I once said something like this in public. The rabbi, 1 week later, gave a whole talk against me that the Rav is like Rav Hirsch, and God, the people don't know what they're talking about. I don't say the Rav is opposed to college. What, am I an idiot? But he made clear the times demanded. It's not like Rav Hirsch. There's a tremendous difference here. And you can read it. You don't have to believe me in their own words. All right. Now, Rabbi Belkin paid a very big personal price. And here I want to quote a story that Vic tells. I always heard this story, but here you have a source. It's on page 165. Yeshiva University, that was his life. As I told you, he never went to an Aguda convention. Very rarely did he appear at an RCA convention. He had nothing to do with the Agudas HaRabbanim. He was never involved, even Mizrahi, where he was a big Zionist, but it never was something that burned within him. In the yeshiva, it overextended. You see, it's one thing to have a yeshiva, have a high school, have a college. He got involved with graduate schools. And he had this concept, if we're going to build a university, let's build something that will not only be Jewish, but it'll be a contribution to America. And of course, the more he built, the greater the financial demands. And ultimately, most of his life circled around meeting the financial demands of the yeshiva. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to praise Dr. Belkin time and again. From the time he became president, paychecks were always on time. Now, you don't realize what I'm saying. Look at Teira Vidas, look at Chaim Berlin, look at RJJ. I don't know today, but from that era, ask anyone who taught there who's still alive, did you ever get a paycheck on time? And during the Depression, and I have to tell you what the yeshiva went through, Rebbeim were not paid for 6 months. The secular faculty went out on strike. The only reason the yeshiva faculty didn't strike, Rav Palayev told me that Rav Moshe said to them, they had a meeting of the Rosh Yeshiva, so Rav Moshe Soloveitchik said, if you're going to strike, they'll bring in smicha students who will give the shayurim. And the kid, our age, when we were in MTA, what did we need? A gadol hador to give a shiur? We need a kid to teach us how to understand the Tosfos, a psak of the Rambam. Knew any kid in the smicha program will be able to help you. They'll take the place of the Rosh Yeshiva. If we strike, we're endangering our jobs.
So Reb Moshe, besides, he held, how are you allowed to get paid? There's a whole sukkah, I don't have to tell you. Mani b'chin, imafatabachin, the Gemara Nedarim, the Rambam, Hilchot Talmud Torah, maledicts anyone who takes a salary for teaching Torah. I can only say, here I'm not a Shomer Kishuyim, if you know the Tshuva, the Tashbeitz, there's a lot written on this. But all right, I get paid, I say, for my research. I work very hard to prepare my shiur, so that's what I get paid, not for teaching. So Rabbi Belkin, they never missed. He went money and Max Zetra and Max Stern, and he borrowed, but the Rebbeim, the faculty, paid on time. You know what the sad part is? And Rabbi and Vigila uses this term, he became a stranger in his own home. No one knew who Reb Shmuel Belka was. And you just saw Eidut Nemana, Dr. Charlie Hexter. I just asked him a few minutes ago. He was in the yeshiva during the very period we're talking about. Did you know Dr. Belkin? And here there is a story. And the footnote is, Vic Geller attributes the story to Shlomo Lariskin, to Steve Riskin. And by the way, I can tell you in parentheses that Vic Geller is one of the greatest influences on Steve Riskin. Do you know the story, how it begins? You've got to read Steve Riskin's memoir. But Sam Levine was the administrator of BTA, and this kid from a poor home is interested in becoming a student. The kid from an irreligious home. So Sam Levine sends this kid as special and took the kid in. So he gets the credit for discovering Steve. But Steve is only Steve Riskin, Rabbi Riskin, because of the woman he married there. Hakol, what does the Medrash say? Breshit Rabbah, Hakol Acharei Haisha. Okay? So he married Vicky. You know the story with Vicky? Vicky was also from an irreligious home. When Vic Geller became a travel agent, he was running a tour to Israel, to Europe, Israel. And Vicky's parents came. She was a high school kid. And they said, we'd like our daughter to go on this tour. And Vic asked them, well, is your daughter observant? Because it was for religious kids. And they thought he was asking, does the girl notice what goes on, observant? You follow? And they answered yes. And Vic took her. And under Vic and the Chanyas, the Chana Levracha, they adopted Vicky spiritually. You should know that. And she became who she became under Vic and Chanyas Geller's guidance. So there's a beautiful story here that says it all. I gotta tell you one other thing, the history of yeshiva. First Hall was built in the early 60s. You remember First Hall?
Yeah.
And First Hall had an elevator. So Mr. Abrams, who ran the yeshiva, legendary Mr. Norman B. Abrams, who was there from the start of Revel's time, he felt very offended. There's an elevator in First Hall, but no elevator in the building that he runs the yeshiva and the high school, and Rabbi Belkin is there. So in the mid-60s, early 60s, I already was in Rosh Yeshiva, I remember like yesterday, they built an elevator in the main academic center. It still works until today. They called that Norman B. Abrams Elevator. So here, Dr. Belkin is in the elevator, and a number of students are in there going to classes. He turned to one of the students and asked, quote, do you know who I am? End quote. The student studied the man next to him for a moment and answered, no, but you look familiar. End quote. Belkin turned his head and began to cry. You see? And you pay a price, you pay a price. I'm a very bad example of what a person should do in life. I never accepted any offer. I had so many offers, money, fame, titles, prestige, authority, call it what you wish. Turned it down.
I can only teach, can learn. I'm not a good example. All right. Hope I did a little good in my life. Actually did a lot of good between yesterday's class and today. I may have pulled off two miracles. But nevertheless, I'm a bad example. And you see, but this was Dr. Belkin. Because he was a loner, it suited his temperament. All that mattered was the yeshiva. All that mattered were getting the paychecks out on time. And this was Reb Shmuel Belkin. Now, Dr. Vic Geller, doctor is an honorary doctor at yeshiva, gave him. Vic Geller reveals something else, which I knew a little bit in a hazy fashion. Look, here is Dr. Belkin, such responsibility, a dreamer, such a life story, but you need an outlet, okay? My outlet, you know, is I let off steam, my students, you have to put up with me, you have to listen what I said yesterday on Danny Greer. It's my outlet. I feel good, I opened my mouth, explain myself. Dr. Belkin's outlet was poetry. He wrote poetry. Could you imagine? Who'd he show it to? I just mentioned Sam Levine. Sam Levine and Dr. Belkin had an unbelievable relationship. He was one of the people that Dr. Belkin showed it to. Sam Levine, his wife, and later in life, when he remarried, his first marriage ended in divorce, and he remarried a very intelligent woman who was a newspaper reporter. He met her at some yeshiva affair, and she was there as a reporter, and she studied with Rabbanim, you know, to learn what Yiddishkeit is all about. And they married, had a very wonderful second marriage, and she remained very loyal to his family. She died about 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago. Remained a Shomeret Shabbat. She had been married. She understood Dr. Belkin. That was his escape. That was what, where he could let out his energy, let out his dreams. I don't know where the poetry is today, and I know that there are members of his family listening to the Shia. And I say to them, if the poetry is extant, if it's available, maybe it's worth looking at again and see if you want to publish it. I realize it's a personal matter, but you have to make that decision. Sometimes personal letters and personal poetry help later generations understood who we were, what we are, what our aspirations were, what achievement meant. There can be a great deal of value in the poetry.
What language is there?
I would imagine he wrote in English. I imagine he wrote in English. Yiddish was his native language. I would imagine he wrote in English because he was already expressing himself, English, America, culture. He paid a very heavy price. And here too, you have to understand, and this is Dr. Belkin, the Lipvashi Yeshiva boy, it all comes back to that theme. He was the most beloved Rebbe in the yeshiva. I yet knew his students. You take Rabbi Bulman, Nachman Bulman, Nathan, what was his name in English? I think Nathan Bulman, am I right? Nathan, thank you. Nachman Bulman. He told, the boys loved him. He was approachable. He was personable. He had the students over his house. He had the students for Yonta, for Shabbos, for Thanksgiving Day. He was accessible. His knowledge was overwhelming. He was a man, Shas and Paiskim, and a good shear, and Greek and Latin professor in the college. I mean, the man's knowledge, they loved him. But if I can put it simply, one of our students right from this classroom had to make a decision recently to go back to America to remain in Israel. Being president of Yeshiva University is a title that Israel found hard to contend with. I'll put it that way. Rabbi Belkin was young. He looked, watched, saw Rebbe, Rosh Yeshiva, then they make him dean of the faculty when Rabbi Revel dies, and the presidency was an allure. And you can't fault Dr. Belkin. Rabbi Rubin will tell you, Moreinu Rabbeinu, Rabbi Soloveitchik, had one desire in life, to become president of Yeshiva University. I heard that from family members. I'm quoting word by word. Thank God he never achieved that goal. Imagine what Reb Shmuel Belkin would have been had he remained the Rosh Yeshiva that he was. Rabbi Belkin, when he became president, attempted to continue saying a Shia. Rabbi Revel gave Shia once a week in Choshen Mishpat. That was his specialty, and no one else could teach it in the yeshiva. He actually had a stroke a month before he died in the middle of his Choshen Mishpat Shia in the yeshiva. Rabbi Belkin attempted for 1 year to continue saying the Shia. Couldn't. It ended. The demands of yeshiva to say a Shia, you have to be prepared. To be prepared, you have to work in laning. You can be the greatest Talmud Chacham, but you have to be organized, you have to have a theme, you have to have sources, you have to prepare. Min kenish no shissen, you just can't shoot from the hip. They're gainim that you can ask a question, they shoot from the hip, but they give a shear, you will not understand them at all. He had to stop. Not only did he have to stop, but this is the second side of the image. Who is the most famous professor of Hebrew literature and philosophy at Harvard? No, Professor Wolfson, Harry Wolfson. Echad the yeshiva boy who became a world-class individual. And Professor Wolfson, who knew both Rabbi Soloveitchik from Boston and he knew Reb Shmuel Belkin from the New England area when he was doing his doctorate in Brown and taking classes as well as Harvard, he made the comment, quote, it's a pity he became the president. He could have developed into a great scholar. So you see, Rabbi Belkin, on one side, the Rosh Yeshiva lost out, and on the other side, the world of scholarship lost out. He was selfless, and this continues the tradition of the yeshiva, maybe of the Europeisha Rosh Yeshiva as well. All of you know that Rabbi Revel married into a very wealthy family, the Travis family. Reb Moshe Bick told me, his face lit up when he said it, this is given the Esther Shidduch in America. It was the first Shidduch made in America. Rabbi Zibitz of Pittsburgh knew about this lady growing up in Marietta, Ohio, Sarah Travis, parents in the oil industry, and they made the Shidduch with Rabbi Belkin, Rabbi Revel, who was in Philadelphia at the time, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Marietta, Ohio, and it was a shidduch that brought the yeshiva to life. But when he took over the yeshiva, Rabbi Revel said no salary. And for years, until his family suffered in lawsuits with Rockefeller and Standard Oil and illegal practices, which they couldn't get away with today, monopoly, he took no salary from the yeshiva. And even when he came back to the yeshiva from the oil industry in 1922, I give you all the details in Revel, actually I had all the papers, his salary read $10,000 and all he took was $4,000 a year. When Reb Moshe came from Europe, he took $3,600 and gave $400 of his own money to Reb Moshe's salary because he said Reb Moshe has a big family, he needs more than I need. And people describe, and he gives all the sources here, how they met during the Depression. interview with Rabbi Emanuel Rothenberg, that's Rabbi Dr. Danny Rothenberg's father, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, Rabbi Emanuel Rothenberg. Rabbi Emanuel Rothenberg described how in the 1930s, he noticed how badly rebels' once elegant shirt cuffs were frayed. Could you imagine the Rosh Yeshiva, the president, shirt cuffs frayed? It's a sad story, Gedolei Yisrael, but this is our shik mazel, I'll put it that way. Rabbi Belkin, very similar, took a minimal salary. They wanted to give him a car. He used the subway for his first years as president. Wouldn't take a car. Only later, when he had so much responsibility and there was the Stern College campus as well, and the Midtown campus and the Cardoza campus, finally he agreed to take a car with a chauffeur to spare and save him time. And there's one of the most beautiful stories. Heard this from eyewitnesses. It's not in Vic's book. The car is parked on Amsterdam Avenue and Rabbi Belkin is coming out to go downtown. And the Rav is coming out. And he asks the Rav, where are you going? And the Rav tells him, and he says, I'll give you a lift. Come into the car. So now the Rav wants to open the door for Rabbi Belkin. Rabbi Belkin, people were watching. This was on Amsterdam Avenue. They were looking out the windows of the yeshiva. And Rabbi Belkin, the Rav says, no, I'll open for you. You're the president. And they were fighting who would open first. Finally, the Rav went on the outside of the car. Dr. Belkin was on the other side, and they opened the doors together at the same time and went into the car. And this is a beautiful story. And now I want to come to the Rav and Rabbi Belkin. All that I've said about Rabbi Belkin, he would have never succeeded without the Rav. You see, students can complain, students can yell, students can shout. Rabbi Belkin would have had to put up with a lot of rebellion and a lot of criticism. Students wanted synthesis, students wanted an American yeshiva, students ultimately didn't want the yeshiva to be in Yiddish, had to switch to English. Rabbi Belkin could not have survived in dignity criticisms like this. He had the miracle that the Rav stood at his side. The Rav already was the Rav. He had developed, thank God, had not become president of the yeshiva, did not have to waste his time fundraising, did not have to fawn and be obsequious to Balabatim. The Rav was the Rav. And students could not challenge the Rav. In the 40s, the 50s, Tully Meadow, you try to challenge him. Could eat you up. Hail, fire, and brimstone. Yitzchak, am I right or wrong? The Rav in New York we're talking about, not the Rav in Boston. He was two different people. He was responding to two different situations. But he viewed in Boston, he was happy if he got a kindergarten kid to shake a lulav and etrog. Right or wrong, Maimonides had school on Chol HaMoed Sukkos. Why? The kids should see a sukkah and be able to be noka lulav and etrog. I don't know today what goes on, but this is a fact. The 1930s,
1940s. That was the level.
That was the level, exactly. But the yeshiva had to be the prime yeshiva in the world, according to the Rav. These were the best students, what he demanded from you. He was not satisfied with second best. All right, he was not satisfied with mediocrity. And you see, here, we have to be honest. The battle for the presidency left a scar. Belkin is elected president in Rosh Yeshiva. Title went hand in hand. And here's the Rav, and in 1944, you see, just when Rabbi Belkin becomes president, the Rav goes through tremendous heartache, the kashrut charges, Rabbi Savitsky, the investigation, the state investigation, the judge appointed, the retired judge, Abraham K. Cohn, by state boss, by Massachusetts State Attorney General Bushnell, 2.5 years of investigation, charges against the Rav, money under the table, tax evasion, the Rav suffered. Of course, in 43, the report came out totally, totally, not only innocent, but admirable, working for the good of the Jewish people, the good of Kashrut, not taking a penny, working for the good of the Sheikhtim, that they shouldn't have to shech from Thursday morning through Friday afternoon, when their hands can no longer move. It's a compliment. As a matter of fact, I can tell you something. The Haredi world will be shocked. But a conservative rabbi once published a big article in Harpades. That's Rabbi Shubau. When the Rav was totally exonerated, he published a beautiful article in English. Rabbi Shubau, Harpades, published it. At that moment in time in Chicago, the Hebrew Theological College, what we call Skoki today, Beit Medrash LaTorah, they were suffering. They can't go on the map. They made the greatest mistake of history by not taking the Rav when he came to America. They brought him to America. They got him the non-quota immigrant status. Right? You've read all the read Rav Kefet, but it's published articles in American Jewish Historical Society. Fassman interviewed. These were the facts. They brought him to America. But it was the Depression. They sent a telegram to Reb Moshe. We brought him to America, but we have no money. Find a shtetl for him in your area. That's how the Rav wound up in Boston. Now, Hebrew Theological College turns to the Rav. You're wasting your time in Boston and you're suffering. We want you to be the Rosh Yeshiva in Chicago. You see, Dr. Belkin is president, Rosh Yeshiva. What do you have to stay in New York for? We're giving you the whole Yeshiva. Al Picha Yeshak Kol Davar. You will be the king. And the Rebbe was a young man yet, had suffered. Seriously considered leaving Boston, NYU, to go to Chicago. And here's the famous conversation between Rabbi Belkin and Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. Dr. Belkin said to him, look, I know you're, and this is, could be not exact words I'm telling you, but it's exactly the gist of the conversation. I absolutely so. Dr. Belkin said to him, look, I know you're upset that I bear the title President of Rosh Yeshiva. You would like to have the title Rosh Yeshiva, but you have to understand, I can't do what I have to do to keep the ship afloat without the Rosh Yeshiva title. I have to be the legal signature. But he said to the Rav, I suffer. I can no longer give a shir. I'm responsible for raising money. Beryl, that's what he called the Rav. If you listen to me, I promise you, you will never have to raise money. I will raise the money. Your job will be to grow in Torah, to teach, and raise Talmidei Chachamim on American soil. I will carry the yeshiva's financial needs. I don't want you to worry about fundraising. I want you to devote all your energies to your Talmidim. Cited from the Rav's youngest sister, Dr. Ann Gerber. Okay? Word by word. And the Rav agreed. I don't think it was an easy decision. I think the lure of Chicago, of being Rosh Yeshiva, of being the boss, later it captivates the Rav's younger brother, Rabbi Soloveitchik, and you all know what that turns into. and maybe min hashamayim zikuhu, that he made the decision to remain at YU, what becomes YU, and it's the most beautiful relationship. From that moment on, there never was a machloket between the Rav and Rav Shmuel Belkin until 1970. Never a machloket. Part of the puzzle is the Rebbetzin. When Rabbi Belkin came to Rhode Island, Brown University, is not far from Boston. You get onto the train and you go to Boston. The Rav spent many a Shabbat in Boston. Not the Rav. Rabbi Belkin spent many a Shabbat in Boston. He became very close to the Soloveitchiks. And the Rebbetzin and Rav Shmuel Belkin hit it off exactly the way the Rav and Rav Shmuel got along. But most important, when a woman hits it off, and Bini Yutera Ben Hashem, the Gemara in Masechet Nida, she always saw to it that the relationship continued with mutual respect and mutual understanding. What I'm telling you is critically important. There never was a bad word between them. More than that, Dr. Belkin's second job in America, his first job, and he was very machpid and very proud, he said, you must put that into the book. That I write about him in Revel, his first job was Rosh Yeshiva in New Haven, Rabbi Levenberg's yeshiva that winds up in Cleveland, from Cleveland to Baltimore, near Yisrael of today. One of the first Rosh Yeshiva Magid Sheyurim there was a young man from Europe, Shmulik Belkin. Just think. His second job, he taught in the Rav's Advanced Talmud Torah for high school kids, Gemara. And there's the legendary story that the Rav told him he has to teach in English. And students complained. Jimmy Gordon, I don't need more sources than Jimmy Gordon, but it's all here. These ears heard the story many times. Jimmy Gordon, Rabbi Macy Gordon's older brother, Zichrono Levracha, Rav in Detroit. And Jimmy says he was in that class. His father was a sheikhid in the area. And the kids were very upset, like when the Rav, when I told you yesterday, the Rav switched to English, it was terrible. Who could understand him in his fancy English? And the kids wanted Yiddish. Gemara darf man lernen in Yiddish. On Yiddish ist das nicht a tam. You with me? Without Yiddish, it's not a tam. I have to explain it. Come on. So they started complaining. So the Rav walked into class. Does anyone have a complaint? I understand people are upset that Dr. Belkin is teaching in English. He has to improve his English. Anyone complaining? Not one kid raised his hand. Rabbi Belkin, please continue teaching in English. And ultimately the kids, you know, it was inevitable, made their peace with it, and Rabbi Shmuel Belkin improved his English. But there was this remarkable relationship that Dr. Belkin and the Rav thought the same. Their whole concept of yeshiva was the same. There was no compromise with America. Yeshiva is Litvish, Europe, Volozhin, Brisk, Telz, Raten, Slabodka, Mir. And the college? Total American, total Western. We don't want a Catholic college. And Dr. Belkin could be criticized. Students couldn't criticize the Rav. Not in the 40s, the 50s, or the 60s. Let me go one step further, and this is the sad part. The Rav's mellowed, had a lot of tragedy. First, 59, 60, had a very serious cancer operation that statistically dove that eerie, he shouldn't have survived. You follow? from I just there's a picture upstairs. Just explain to the young girls working here. No one has a sense of history today. I see pictures on the wall over there. Who, what, when? But there's a picture of B.G. sitting with the Reverend Dr. Belkin. B.G. came to the yeshiva in 1960. That was the first time the Rev appeared at the yeshiva after his operation. He made a special effort to come because Ben Gurion is coming. Dr. Belkin pleaded with him. You know, the world didn't know Rav Shmuel Belkin, but B.G. sure knew HaRav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik by 1960. It's the first time the Rav came back. And then the Rav had the triple avelut, and the Rav lost his wife. Now, there are students sitting in front of me who, lo aleinu, have gone through this. But in the Rav's case, he never recovered from the loss of his wife. When they were one. It was one unit. The Rav was a gong, was a genius. He couldn't deal with ordinary people. Had he not married, he would have never become the Rav. She enabled him. She herself was a brilliant lady with a PhD, but she enabled him. She had that a woman, the chush, the bina yetera. She enabled him to deal with mortals like we are. Follow. He never got over her death. The truth is, you have to go further and you have to marry again and the Gemara in Sota and the Gemara, you can deal. But this was the reality. 67, she was no longer there. And she could no longer bridge the worlds that were developing at YU with the Rav. Not only that, and I'm being very brief, but there's very deep thought here. Not only that, Kol Zman, the Rav got advice and direction from his wife. He was in the mold of what he was in America from the day he arrived. When you lose your wife, two of the children are married. His son, who's not married, lives in Israel. You need help. You're older. You're struggling. You've gone through tremendous depth, aggravation, despair. He started to lean on his students more than ever. When we studied with the Rav, all right, he leaned on us to the extent, bring me a Maseches Makos from the library. Bring down a Maseches, bring down a Rishon, bring down this Sefer, that Sefer. He leaned on his students, but who didn't daven? Who didn't hear Kriya Satayra today? Kum and Vatmachan Aminyan Famincha, and we'll lay in Kriya Satayra. You understand? He one time he had to get back to Boston, he was in New York for Erev Purim. So he read the Megillah in class. I remember until today, and he said, I have to read it at the earliest possible time because I'm getting on the planes. I remember one kid, chutzpah, idiot. He didn't come to hear. It's too early to read. You know, he needed Seisak HaChavim Rabbeinu Tam. The Rav read. The Rav is reading. He read my Megillah. I just bought a Megillah, and I held it with the Rav. I have a Megillah. If I be a chassid, it would be worth a lot of money. You follow me, Charlie? A Megillah that the Rav read for. Too bad I'm not a chassid, a litvak, but I can't help it. Because the Rebbetzin wasn't there, this is all my opinion, I guarantee you I'm 99% correct. World War III broke out, 1970. 69, 70, and here's what happened. And I want to end off with this. It's a famous chapter. It's been cited, quoted. Let me give you my take. Although I was living in Israel at the time, but I knew what was going on. Yeshiva had grown, America had grown, and yeshiva was getting government money. And the government insisted they will only give their money to an institute that is colorblind, open to men, women, no matter what your origins are, no matter what your religion is, only then do you qualify for government money. In order to solve the problem, And now the yeshiva has a massive budget. Rabbi Belkin turned to lawyers. And what can we do? Yeshiva's legal counsel came up with the idea to separate reeds as a different part of the yeshiva. It's not part of Yeshiva University, it's an adjunct. What kind, there's a legal term.
Affiliate.
An adjunct, an affiliate, fine. The students already, by 1970, the swing to the right has begun. Dr. Belkin is no longer in good health. The burden of yeshiva has affected his daily comportment. The Rav has suffered tremendously. He's mellowed. He's dependent on the students, as I explained. And some of the students, interestingly enough, one of the students who led the fight was a nephew to Mr. Abrams. He's no longer alive. I don't want to mention his name. Died. I don't even think he married. It's sad. Oh, what they said, Dr. Belkin is destroying the yeshiva. The yeshiva will become secondary. The yeshiva will be pushed away. And finally, around the Chag HaSmicha that year, tremendous battle broke in the open. And that's the famous talk where the Rav speaks and he says, I am seeing ghosts, I am worried. And he praises Dr. Belkin, calls man that Rabbi Belkin is heading the yeshiva. I know it'll remain firm and strong, but when we make it an affiliate, when we change its status, who knows what will happen after Rabbi Belkin? And it's a very sad. You can hear the recording. Rabbi Belkin jumps up and tries to cut the Rav off and says, it will not be, it will not be, it will remain the center. This is only a legal machination. And while this is going on, students are demonstrating outside with posters and signs that this is the end of the yeshiva, Rabbi Belkin is ruining it, we can't agree to this. And the Rav says, remember, I tried hard not to gain bad publicity for the yeshiva. If I wouldn't have stepped in, I told them they cannot demonstrate. And the kids yell out from the audience, Rabbi Soloveitchik, there are 100 kids outside demonstrating. And the Rav responds, but had I not stepped in and told them not to demonstrate, there would have been 500 kids demonstrating. And a tremendous battle. Rakefet's take, had the Rebbetzin been alive, that battle would have never happened. Afterwards, they met in private with all the yelling, the shouting, looking to commentator, go back, check the files. I think it's online. I think you can get it on the computer. Oh, you won't believe World War III with intensity. It made Clinton versus Trump look mild by comparison. And soon gone, forgotten. How many years later are we? 47 years later. And we have to say, in all honesty, Rav Shmuel Belkin was 100% right. Reitz remains the heart of the yeshiva. It shifted gears. It's not the yeshiva that I grew up in, not the yeshiva that Charlie attended, not the yeshiva that Jitz attended, no question, not the yeshiva that even Dov attended. It has shifted gears. You could see it by watching the Chag HaSmicha, but there is no question. It is the heart of the university, and it remains firm and loyal to Torah Hashem Tamima. It's not to say that there aren't difficulties. Of course there are difficulties. Of course there are challenges. I remember when I was at the yeshiva, when I was honored by Bernard Rebbe Graduate School, what was it, 2 years ago, 3 years ago? Time flies, wow. I remember I was the guest of the yeshiva, and for, what was it, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, I stayed in the Rebbe's apartment. People scared me. Some of the Rosh Yeshiva, Are you afraid? Are you afraid? Do you feel the shadow of the Rav? I just saw a dirty apartment that wasn't upkept properly. That's what I can tell you. I don't know what to be. But that was the Rav's apartment, absolutely. And I saw the yeshiva, and I saw some of the problems. And there was a kid I knew from Israel that studied in Torah Shraga. And this kid gave me arguments that girls are not allowed upstairs in the dormitory. I think they're only allowed on the first floor, not allowed above. Why aren't they allowed? And he'll give me an argument. And this kid, he puts on tefillin in the chveis. If you leave $100 bill in the tefillin bag, he'll put it on. I'll put it that way. And it hurts. It hurt me because I taught his father. I know his mother at Sadeket. I know his grandparents. It hurts. But we don't win all our battles. We don't win. We have in Israel a similar situation. We're caught in conflict with the Western world, with the world of allure, with the world of wine, women, and song. I recognize it. We our percentage of victory is good, but it could be a lot better. But one thing we have to be honest, swing to the right, and I have bigger plans for Yeshiva Halavai, Ari Berman, and Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman, and yours truly, we can sit down a year from now, or less than a year from now. I have big, big plans, I have to tell you. If I'm listened to, I may change the course of YU history. I hope Lekavod Ulatiferet. But Dr. Belkin was right. The Yeshiva remained the heart, the soul, the crowning achievement of Yeshiva University.
What did the Rav want them to do instead?
I can't answer that. I don't know if anyone can answer that, but I can tell you a lot of people said, waive the federal money. You see with the homosexuality.
The truth is some people made that argument today.
Waive the government money, but even Lakewood gets government money, you understand? So not so simple for an institution with a $500 million budget a year to waive government money. So I want to reiterate, I hope I have proven my point that Yeshivas of Yitzchak Chanan, despite all the winds of America, at least until 1970, retained the image of Litta, of East Europe. All these years, until the mid-60s, you still heard Yiddish in the hallway of the yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva were all European. What happens in the 70s is a story unto itself that has to be told by other, I hope, Talmidei Chachamim / historians who will stand on my shoulders. I cannot do it because I have a prejudice. I lived it. I felt it. I have opinions. I know the people involved. But I hope I have presented an honest picture today. And there's no doubt that Rav Shmuel Belkin and the Rav, you can call them Siamese twins, but that unique relationship enabled the yeshiva not to become Americanized, not to change what Musar is all about. Reb Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessman, that was living Slabodka before your eyes. The Rav was living Brisk before your eyes. Reb David Lifshitz was living the Fruma element in Mir before your eyes. I know just what I was saying. Reb Yeruchim Gerelik was a Vilda, but what a Lamdan, what an individual, rotten and brisk. Reb Noach Bornstein, the crown of Mir. Reb Shmuel Volk, Telsh, was das main Telsh Yeshiva. Reb Chenich Fishman, Talmud, Reb Yeruchim Levovitz, Drakefit doesn't look at Jewish philosophy. People get mad at me. Why aren't you interested? I said, I saw the Talmud of Yeruchim Levavitz. I have no philosophical questions. I'm sorry.
But you're talking about philosophy
Alex.
No, Rebbe, yeah. I have to make this point, okay? I've heard you say this before. The Rav, I coined this term, the Rav is not doing Jewish philosophy in a classic sense. What he's doing is what I call Torah philosophy. He's using the language of philosophy as a vehicle to explain core concepts in Emunah.
Beautiful.
Core concepts
and I agree with you.
He's not responding to apologetics.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
and I say, very, Alex, beautiful, and I say, I've often said this, the little philosophy I know is from the Rav's homiletical shiurim, where he uses the philosophy to bring home a message, to inspire the weenus, that to strengthen the weenus, the Rav. I told you, I watched the affair of these Chag HaSmicha. It took me 4 sittings to watch over 2 hours, but the Rav was lacking. The speeches didn't elevate. You have to fly. You're giving kids smicha. They have to feel a challenge, a calling, a past, a future.
Why do you think the Rav could never create any Talmidim who had that spirit? He passed on the goof in terms of Shas and Poskim, but he didn't pass on.
I hope my Hashkafet Shirim throughout the years have illustrated I'm a Talmud of the Rav.
Yeah, I think you're the only person I've heard from YU or anywhere.
So they say behind my back that I'm the one who's the best Darshan like the Rav. And I say, what, I'm not a Talmud Chacham? Well, you understand? Then others say, the Rav called me his Jewish historian. So I tell everyone that destroyed me. No one gives me credit for anything outside of a little Jewish history. All right, someone signed you, son. Gentlemen, before I end, I model HaKadosh Baruch Hu, B'lei V'nefesh, B'yitziyato Mahu Amen, Modi Ani Lefanecha, Adonai Elohai V'Elohai Avotai, Shesamta Chelki Miyoshvei Beit HaMedrash, V'lo Samta Chelki Miyoshvei Kranot, Shani Mashkim V'Hei Mashkimim, Ani Mashkim L'Divrei Torah, V'Hei Mashkimim L'Devarim B'Teilim, Ani Amel V'Hei Mamelim, אני אמלו מקבל שכה, והם אמלים ואינם מקבלים שכה. אני רץ והם רצים. אני רץ לחיי העולם הבא, והם רצים לבי השחת. שנאמה, ואתה אלוהים תורידם לבי השחת, אנשי דמים ומירמה, לא יחצו ימיהם, ואני אבטח בך. Now, a few freebies. This is the Yitzchak. This is the latest tradition. It's a very interesting issue. Again, what I found the most interesting is on Rav Shimon. This is on the new edition of the Maral, and I say I was born before my time. This is the Maral. They spoon feed you. Now, if you guys want to gather around, dear students, I have some serious and some jokes to show you. Here, my Talmud, Mark Shapiro, asked me to identify everyone in this picture. This picture, I identified actually in Revel.
What year?
This is 1929. This is the Chag HaSmicha 1929. This is Dr. Mark, who was from Baltimore, a lover of Torah, and this is, I want to be sure, that's Rabbi Zalmanovich, right? I'm right. That's Rabbi Zalmanovich, was a Ger Chassid Mashkiach in the yeshiva. That's Ramaz. That's Rav Shimon Shkop. That's Rabbi Revel. That's Rabbi Leventhal. And that's Rabbi Aronovich. If anyone is a historian, take it. Now, this is again a Chabad rabbi. What my friends think I do, okay? What my friends think I do. The first one. This is what people say I do, just drinking l'chaim. I love this. This is what society thinks he does, that's the shul. It's just a normal rabbi. What my mom thinks I do, that's taking care of his children, okay? What I think I do is putting tefillin on people, okay? The kid. And what I really do, cleaning the shoe. So I have to say, very.
Where does this come from?
A Talmud sent it to me. It's probably online, some Chabad. This is the early years, once again, this is Mashiach Zeit. Discussion of the early years of the Rebbe in Kehilat Jeshurun. Okay? With the rabbi, the new rabbi. This is beautiful. Southern Kosher barbecue. All the Jewish institutions barbecue, have a contest who's the best.
and it has to be kosher, which kol hakavod. Historic chuppah in Times Square. This is a Chabad couple that got married in Times Square. I wouldn't do it. I don't like it. I don't know, but...
Why do they want to do that?
I don't know. Ask them. Crown Heights. This is the story of the two pizza shops fighting with each other in Crown Heights and what the Beit Din Paskin. Very interesting. I may be there this summer to eat. I want to see what's going on there. This is... the French First Lady, I mean, this is beyond comprehension. She's 24 years older than the president. I think he was her third grade student, like my mother, and he made up his mind. He's going to marry her. And she divorced her husband, a mother of children. I don't know. He was 15, and she was his 39-year-old drama teacher, married with three children. If anyone wants this very interesting article by Benjamin Brown, on Orthodoxy, it's dated. It's about 15 years ago, I would say the article is. I don't know if there's a date on it, but he's gone on to great scholarship. Very interesting article, very well written. This is a YU graduate, Rabbi Benjamin Blech. I taught his children, well known. It's about chassid and camouflage. Very beautiful story here with the Rebbe and what the Rebbe tells him, what the Rebbe wants him to do. And this is Rabbi Liu in London giving tips to Chabadnikim students how you go about putting tefillin on people and bringing them closer to Yiddishkeit. And here is a new book that's coming out. New book tells personal stories. It's put together all the personal stories of the Rebbe, of individuals and his advice and how he helps. And this is again the 92nd Street Y, which I believe is a tragedy and a chilul Hashem, a treif dinner. They call it kosher, biblical kosher. You follow what I spoke about yesterday in class with the Oraita and the Rabbanan. Here, biblical kosher. God have mercy, and 90, because the kosher caterer costs more. All right. And, by the way, I pick up when we'll notify you, Vic. I'll let you know. You'll tell your people from your area. I'll let the, you'll know Morty, and I'll pick up again whenever this man begins here. It'll be exactly the same time. My Sunday class will parallel this. It's going to be Sunday morning. I hope I'll have more students next year. I hope so. We'll see what happens. What type of group comes in, and we'll pick up just where we left off, but we're beginning a major, major topic, the history of the rabbinate in America, 1902 through 1960. And I promise you, you will not fall asleep in class, unless you were up all night like Shavuos, and then I can't help it. Until we meet again, I want to welcome Charlie back, Baruch Hashem, and until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vatanya. And Vic, I'll see you Friday, right? You come.